Welcome to Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. My name is Beth Shank, a registered nurse in Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, our guest is Joyce Stein. Joyce is a retired neonatal intensive care nurse from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Joyce.
Hello, Beth. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your career as a nurse.
Well, I've had a career that spanned over 35 years as a staff nurse at the University of Michigan's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. Pretty much stayed in that field. I branched out a little bit into the discharge home care field with infants who went home on ventilators or tracheostomies. And so I got a little bit of taste of home care of the pediatric population. And then after I retired a couple years ago, I transitioned into the public health department here in Michigan. And now I work on some quality improvement programs.
Terrific. And somewhere along the way, you got interested in environmental health as well. Tell me about that.
Yes. It kind of, you know how things really germinate. So it started probably in my college years that I got interested in the environment as itself. And then I don't think I really linked it to my nursing career till about the 1990s when they came out with a concern with infants and the neonatal intensive care unit being exposed to a chemical called DEHP, which is in the plastic of IV tubing. So that kind of took us all by surprise, and that was kind of a wake-up call. A lot of us in the neonatal intensive care unit hadn't really paid any attention to toxic chemicals or environmental exposures or anything like that in our very specific nursing practice. So that kind of woke me up and piqued my interest as to, well, what is that all about? So I kind of dabbled just in gaining more education. And really, it wasn't until about 2009 that I became a more involved advocate as to what was the environmental health or environmental consequences on infants and pregnancy.
Was your interest then still primarily around toxic chemicals?
Yes, it was mostly about exposures in the pregnant women and then fetal development. In the neonatal intensive care unit, we see premature infants, and so it has always piqued my attention as to why we have so many premature infants. What causes that? It's amazing that we still don't have a good handle on that. And I think one of the issues is we aren't looking at all of the possibilities, which could be environmental or toxic chemical exposures. And then how does that work with fetal development? Just the whole developing of the fetus, and it became obvious that, you know, it was a misnomer that the placenta would protect the fetus. You know, that it would block anything dangerous from, you know, entering into the fetus and development. And that became proved quite wrong, as, you know, they several decades ago found that there would be over 200 chemicals in the umbilical cord blood. You know, so things were obviously passing from the pregnant mom into the fetus. So we therefore needed to be much more concerned that the fetus was getting exposed to a variety of things just through the mom. So what were the exposures to mom, and what are we going to focus on to make sure that we're protecting mom's health so that we're then protecting the babies?
Right. So that was a big change in practice. I work on practice issues, as you know, and I'm interested in what you all did back in the 90s when you realized that the DEHP was a problem with especially the very small premature babies.
Well, unfortunately, as a staff nurse, I didn't quite see what was all going on behind the scenes. However, we, as staff nurses, we knew that, okay, we were stopping one product, purchasing was looking at a different product. We heard different things as to why, which of our products, such as IV tubing or IV catheters or the feeding tubes were a big one, as to how we were going to get those to be DEHP. And so, like I said, it piqued my interest, but I really didn't hone down on the science of it. And then shortly after that, there was a discovery about thimerosal. We used to put thimerosals in the isolates, and then suddenly that wasn't something we should be doing. And then they were talking about thimerosal as a preservative in vaccines and in certain IV preparations. And it was like, so all of that stuff was trickling in to pique my interest and my passion that we need to be paying more attention.
And so you referred to really doing this a little bit more directly or formally in the late 2000s, 2009, I think you said. What spurred that?
Well, as I got a little more, of course, it was kind of late. It was almost 25 plus years into my career. It was like, you know, nurses need to be more vocal about what's going on with our patients. And so I became a board member of the Michigan Nurses Association. Actually, I joined the health policy committee as to, so how do these things become law? You know, how does legislation get created? How do we nurses impact legislation? And when I was on this committee, they were looking for a representative to represent the Michigan Nurse Association on the Michigan Network for Children's Environmental Health. And that, of course, piqued my interest on a variety of issues because it had to do with children and protecting them from environmental exposures. So I became the liaison with that coalition. And then things just sort of snowballed. You know, when you do work, as you know, in advocacy or environmental health, it very much is moving sort of fluidly for groups kind of connecting with each other. You know, you meet a certain group here and you're working with them, and then that kind of morphs into another group, and then you kind of spread a wide net of everybody working on some very similar issues. So at the time, back in 2009, we were working on Michigan's Safe Children's Product Act. One of our big things we were trying to work on was transparency. We felt that the public had a right to know what was in children's product. Was there cadmium? Was there lead? You know, was there mercury in the toys, in the pacifier, in the plastic teething rings, you know, that you give to infants? You know, is the public aware of what these things are? And the state of Washington, as I recall, was much further along in their pursuit of having a state legislative piece of legislation that would actually require this. And so Michigan was working on a similar legislative agenda with a coalition of a number of different groups. Oh, I think there were 20 or 30 at least, if not more, that were in this Michigan Network for Children's Environmental Health to work on legislation to the Safe Children's Product Act to help protect what kids are exposed to.
Yeah, that seems so very reasonable. How did that go?
It went well as far as visibility. We did a lot of visibility. We campaigned for about 2 years. I did a lot of press conferences and press releases, which was a new territory for me. As a nurse, you don't see yourself going out there and doing press conferences in front of a microphone or whatever. But I came to realize that the public wants to usually hear from a physician or a nurse as to if it's a health-related topic. And so the organization I was working with, the Michigan Network for Children's Environmental Health, was very excited to have a nurse be the spokesperson for them, you know, when they had different issues they wanted to confront or make more aware to the public or the legislators. So we didn't really get anything passed. But it sort of snowballed into the discussion was going on at the federal level about TSCA reform, the Toxic Substance Control Act, back in 2010, 2011. And Senator Frank Lautenberg had been working on that for decades and not really ever been able to get it to fruition. And so in 2010, I can't remember at the moment who's actually, it was the Safer Chemicals Healthy Families, put together the Stroller Brigade, which was a national effort from environmental groups to come to Washington with their strollers and make a point that the reforming the TSCA bill, the Toxic Substance Control Act, was necessary because it had health implications for infants, for pregnant moms, and for fetuses and infants and children. And we didn't feel legislators were really taking that legislation seriously. And so it was quite amazing. You know, all of these moms, you know, not a typical lobbying group you would think of, coming down on Washington and, you know, kind of demanding that we should be looking at TSCA reform to protect children's products.
What you're saying, it makes so much sense that this is a nursing issue and is a nursing message. Though I think you're right, a lot of people don't necessarily expect that to be a common role of nurses. And a lot of nurses don't expect that. Tell me about your own evolution, I guess, from being a staff nurse, which was, you know, excellent work caring for super vulnerable people, little people. So what is it like to be an advocate?
I think I found two different roles to be an advocate. One was I was advocating just about discharge rights for the families and in getting the services that they needed for their infants. And so it just sort of rolled over into, you know, we should be paying more attention as nurses what these babies are being exposed to, both in the hospital, which we still haven't done a great job as. There are a lot of neonatal intensive care nurseries that are doing great work on that, but it's not necessarily, you know, seen throughout all of them. I'd love to see a bigger effort made by NICU nurses to look at all the products that we're using on babies, lotions, and you know, we don't use baby powder anymore. You know, what's in the diapers? You know, what's in the isolate? What's in the air that they breathe? Many areas that we could be working on. But as a staff nurse, I found I actually had more time to devote to these things as far as being able to be available to go advocate for different things. Congenital anomalies were also a key passion of mine. So we do a neonatals nurses conference here in Michigan. So I did do a couple talks back in the 2000 to 2014, 2015, just to let my colleagues know that we should be looking at these things. Then there was the BPH, the BPA, when that came out in baby bottles and plastics and plastic cups and whatever. That was a huge help in fostering transparency and just educating the public to ask more questions. You know, part of this is in order to put pressure on legislators, we have to have the public asking more questions. And pregnant moms carry a lot of weight, and moms in general carry a lot of weight to ask these questions, and sometimes they get more coverage because it's such a vulnerable population. But as nurses, I think we have to be out there leading the charge, or at least having more visibility.
And I'm reminded that nurses, again, are the most trusted voice. And I think are good messengers for this sort of thing, because just when I hear you talk, it just makes so much sense. Of course we don't want to be harming these tiniest of babies. You know, of course we think that our products are safe, and of course we think that the care we're giving is the safest possible. And so I think it's, you know, troubling that may not be the case. And you're right. It's in a lot of cases, it's the nurses who really bring this forward.
And you don't really get any of that in education. I know, I think Jean Leffler's has mentioned that, you know, in the curriculum back in the 70s, you know, we didn't get any environmental health curriculum. You know, we didn't get any smidgens of air quality or air pollution, fertilizers, you know, what are those exposures, and, you know, what should you be thinking about? You know, what are babies exposed to if they live in an urban area versus a rural area? What effect does that have? And here in Ann Arbor, we have another group called healthystuff.org, where they do a lot of testing, and they've done different campaigns of, when the BPA came out, they were testing can liners, you know, and looking at, you know, helping moms be aware of what chemicals were in the can linings. And then they were looking at car seats, because, you know, babies and children spend a lot of times in car seats, and specifically looking at flame retardants. Flame retardants was a big thing that I started to learn more about as I got into some of these networking groups, and flame retardants in so many products that children and babies are exposed to. The other one would be what they call those nap mats, where, you know, kids in daycare, you know, are on those plastic mats to take naps on, and they're breathing the fumes and flame retardants that sort of waffle off of the plastic through the foam that's underneath. And you wouldn't even think of that. You wouldn't think about that. I'd say the other big thing that brought more awareness to nurses, at least in the NICU, was the secondhand smoke. That became a really big issue with us back in the, again, probably the 90s, late 90s, about making sure if parents had smoked, you know, trying to protect the baby from inhaling that secondhand smoke on their clothes and stuff. So, you know, little trickles of information to staff nurses as walk goes out into the public, gets more aware, becomes more of a media issue. Then nurses kind of say, oh, maybe we should be aware of what that has for our practice. So, the healthystuff.org has been able, at least in the Ann Arbor area, to spotlight different things, which then has waffled into more of a campaign of looking at retailers. We do some work here in Michigan challenging like Graco, who's making car seats. Challenging them to be more responsible as to what chemicals they put in their products. And the healthystuff.org has worked with one of the other Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families, and another group for looking at Target or Walmart, what chemicals are in their products that they're selling. Can they be more responsible as to, what chemicals they're, we're looking at attacking it from a retailer's perspective. You know, if we can't get legislation from the legislative side, either in the state or the federal, then another approach is to make the consumers more aware, like taking antibiotics out of meat products. It makes the public more aware. So then they want to start to demand organic vegetables or antibiotic-free meat. So, you kind of have to work from all ends to try and achieve some of these goals.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all your work for us humans. That's excellent. I know now that you're involved with the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, which is, of course, the sponsor of this podcast. Tell me about your role and what you see as, really the value of Annie or offerings of Annie that people should know about.
Well, that's curious because I got connected with Annie with the first stroller brigade. I had never heard of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments before, and I was at the first stroller brigade, and there were Katie Huffling and numerous other nurses. I think there were maybe 15 or 18 of us somehow I got connected with Katie and the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, and we had a separate little educational seminar about nurses getting together as a group, and that was my first beginnings of what the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments was. I think it's just a fascinating group of just nurses reaching across the country and looking at all of the different levels that we as nurses can start to influence environmental health impacts, whether it's climate change or toxic chemicals, fracking, and all across the country. So it's a rather unique group. And then I was privileged to be asked to be on the board back in 2015. So I've been serving on the board as secretary. And I just think it's an organization that serves such a role for educating nurses and even non-nurses. Great resources between the website and different conferences and fly-ins that, the organization has done. So I think it's just a unique organization being all nurses working on all of the different work groups and providing this information to other nurses.
Great. Thank you for that. You have, you're retired, but you're also still working, I realize, but you've had a careers long view about health. And I just wonder if there's something particularly right now that you're most concerned about regarding environment and health.
I'm starting to dabble a little more with the climate change, but still the toxic chemical and pregnancy issue is my main focus, looking at endocrine disruptors and exactly, which chemicals are of concern, and working with other groups like the EPA. Annie has done some work through the EPA. I think it's important to try and work through as many different groups as you can. So I think I'm right now more focused on just advocating to other groups for creating awareness. I know our American Nurses Association, Michigan RN group is doing a regional, just a 1 day or a 1 hour lecture, but it's going to be on climate change and environmental health in nurses, which is another step in the right direction. And, just putting that out there, making it more noticeable. I'm trying to work more with the Michigan Nurse Association, just getting nurses to be better advocates, to taking part in legislative process, rules, regulations. We have to be influencing, and we have to become the lobbyist in a sense. It can't just all be the corporates and the corporations and the businesses. We've got to speak for the consumers. So I think I'm using the toxic chemical platform as a way to advocate that nurses need to wake up and look at environmental health exposures and what it's doing to our patients.
That's great. And how would you say nurses can get involved? You mentioned your state nurses association and different conferences. What are some other ways that practicing nurses or nurses in university settings could get involved?
Yeah, I think I try to encourage, every year we do a number of student nurses come up to the state capitol. And we have little sessions, and I'll do my little thing on advocacy and environmental health, and somebody else will do a little thing on ways for nurses to get involved in advocacy. So that's one way is we can work through with nursing students. But I encourage all of the nurses I get in contact with, they need to join their professional nursing organizations. They need to get on their health policy committees. They need to get on their committees at work, their clinical practice committees, and just they need to educate themselves so they become better advocates. And there's a lot of different tools out there, like my National Association of Neonatal Nurses has a Nurse in Washington internship that they will do once a year and send two nurses to this Washington internship for 3 days in Washington just to get your feet wet. That's how I started back in 2009. And then I was privileged to be a part of the REACH fellowship that was with a group of Annie nurses. And we were working on this fellowship was designed to try and have more groups interact with the EPA. And so we made several visits to the EPA and tried to work with the EPA and toxic chemicals. And that was fascinating. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. And I just try and encourage nurses to, it works best to work through a group. You know, we can't be a lone wolf out there. And whether it's your nursing organization or whether it's a hospital committee, whether it's Healthcare Without Harm or whether it's the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments or whether it's your state nursing organization, you just have to be involved in something. And then it will usually spill over into something else.
Well, that's great advice for nurses and not just students, but in all roles. I wondered if there's something you'd like to say to the non-nurses in the world, either in Michigan or elsewhere, in terms of paying attention to these facts of environment and health.
Well, I think I would encourage them to keep asking us nursing professionals what the answers are. I think they should challenge us to help provide them the answers. And we're supposed to be the most trusted profession. And, you have that, that any time you're a nurse and you're a family member, the family members are always running to you with, oh, I've got this or I've got that. What do you think? And, I enjoy it when the public and when non-nurses or non-other professionals or other healthcare professionals challenge us to make sure that we are looking at our looking for the answers to help protect the public. I enjoy that part of my job right now in public health. It's a huge responsibility to make sure that you're looking out for those who can't look out for themselves, and you're asking the questions. And when they ask the questions of you, you need to then go find the answers and help them find the answers. So,
terrific. Yeah, nurses are great resources, and we have access to great resources as well. That's one of the things that has been repeated in these podcasts is that nurses do an excellent job of translating complex scientific and physiological concerns into everyday language that people can really grasp.
Especially in the neonatal field, new moms, old moms, young moms, whatever, when parents have infants, their key question often is this safe for my baby? Is this going to be safe for my baby? Can you recommend what's the best diaper for my baby? So, we need to be as professionals, we need to be looking for those answers so that we can guide them into an appropriate toxic-free choice and that they're making the best choices for their infants and children.
Yeah, terrific. Well, Joyce, it's been so nice to talk with you today. Is there any, before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to add?
The only thing I would say is that this is a long process. We got the Frank Lautenberg passed in 2016. It took a long time. We've gotten different companies to do things, so people should never get discouraged. Sometimes it's a good idea for ideas to germinate and that you don't get an answer right away to something, but working in environmental health and in trying to improve health. It's a building block situation, and we should just keep on trucking, keep on doing, keep on asking questions, looking for answers.
Yeah, that's great. The wisdom of patience. That was well said. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Beth.
And thank you all for listening to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast today. Check us out at envirn.org. That's ENVIRN.org for more information about the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environment. And also, if you have a chance, please leave a review for us on the Apple Podcasts. That helps us move up in the ranks, and it makes it easier for people to find us. Thanks, and talk to you next time.